Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Megillah Daf Yud Daled. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur 8 lines from the top of Daf Yud Daled. You will notice that we have a double underline, and we are continuing with our special marking for the psukim of the Megillah, Megillas Esther, that are being explained, that are being darshaned. This pasuk is from Perek Gimel Pasuk Yud. Before we begin the Gemara itself, we glance at the side where we have a topic heading, Gedoyla Hasoras Tabas, greater was the removal of Achashverosh's ring and transferred to Haman, Yoiser mi 48 Nevim v'sheva Nevios, Shetnis Nabu Lohem Lisrael. The prophets, greater than the 48 prophets and 7 prophetesses that said prophecy for the Jewish people. Now, the role of the prophet on many occasions was to chastise and arouse the Jewish people to strengthen their bond with the Almighty. So that, in all due respect to the prophets and their efforts over the years, the fear that the removal of the ring struck in the hearts of the Jews had a greater effect in strengthening this bond and having the Jews turn to the Almighty more so than the prophecies and chastising of the prophets over the years. The Gemara. Vayosar HaMelech es Tabatoi. And the king, Achashverosh, removed his signet ring, empowering Haman to have, we'll say, executive powers. Omar Rabbi Abba Bar Kana, Gedoyla Hasoras Tavas, greater was the removal of that of the ring, Yoiser Merboi Mishmoina Nevi'im V'sheva Nevi'os, Shinisnabu Hem Yisrael. More strength than the 48 prophets and 7 prophetesses that said prophecy of to the Jews, Shekulon lo hichzirum lemutav, all of them were not effective in having them turn to the better, to return to the Almighty, v'ilu hasoras tabas, whereas the removal of the ring, hichziroson lemutav, had caused them, they realized that their destruction was imminent, and that caused them to turn back to the Almighty and strengthen the attachment to Him. And now the Gemara gets off the Sukkim Drosha approach for quite a while. You'll notice if you skim ahead as far as the markings that we have in Gemara markings, you'll see that we don't pick up the Droshas of Sukkim until you get to Daf Tes Vav. So we're taking a long break from the series of psukim of Megillah, Megillas Esther, psukim drushas, as we said, until Daf Tes Vav. So it's quite a break, and the bulk of the Gemara of today's shiur, you will see, is dedicated, not only the bulk, but we'll say the entire balance of today's shiur is dedicated to the issue of prophecy, and we will see much more as we go on. Tonu Rabbanan, Arboim Ushmoina Nevi'im V'sheva Nevi'os Nisnablam Yisrael. There were 48 prophets and 7 prophetesses that said prophecy for the Jewish people. V'lo Pichasuv, V'lo Siru Mashikosu B'Torah. They didn't detract. They didn't add to the mitzvos of the Torah. Chutz Mimikra Megillah. With the exception of reading of the Megillah. So that we know from other Gemaras that the darshaning the pasuk Eila Hadvarim Mikan, the Gemara says elsewhere, She'en Hanovi Rashoi L'Chadesh Dovar. The prophets do not come to be Mechadesh, to institute new rulings, new mitzvos, additional mitzvos. Hence you find the Gemara at the end of Maseches Megillah makes the point that there are 613 mitzvahs. And we find amongst the Rishonim commentaries discussions how to count what are the 613 individual mitzvahs. But that's a given, a premise, that we have 613 mitzvahs. The Nevi'im do not come to add or detract from the mitzvahs. And here we have a Bryce saying there's one exception where they added a mitzvah, and that is Mikra Megillah. But even with that, the Gemara here seeks out a source. Where did they come to do that? My Dorosh. What did they analyze to enable them to add the mitzvah of the Megillah reading? Omar Rabbi Chiyah bar Aovin, Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, Kal v'chomer. They used Kal v'chomer logic. Uma me'avdus l'cherus amrinon shira. Mind you, from if slavery to freedom, we say song, we sing song, or we say praise of the Almighty. Mimisa l'chayim lo kol shekein. And by the way, that avdus l'cherus is a reference to the celebration of Pesach, where we say Hallel and we commemorate the Almighty's redemption of the Jews. And Rashi adds, they said Shira al Hayam. That was a reference to the song of we call it Oz Yashir at the crossing of the sea. So we see that we have Shira for redemption from slavery to freedom. So when it comes from a sentence of death to life, lo kol shekein, all the more so. So that means Misa l'chaim lo kol shekein, all the more so. So using Kal v'chomer logic, we come out that we say we read the Megillah as a form of Shira. Now, we have some markings that draw our attention. So let's take a look. First of all, we have some brackets. There's a double set of brackets in this Gemara. These brackets, the angular type brackets that we've used, on the side of the Gemara, there's a starred note, Achrei HaSograyim. After this bracketed section, you can see how long it is by using the bracket length indicator, a vertical dotted line. HaGemara Tidoin Be'inyon Mispar Hanavim. We mentioned just now that there were 48 and 7, the number of prophets. Later, after the brackets, the Gemara will be asking, if you skim down in the Gemara text itself, you can see the Gemara says, Vesu Lekha, are there no more? You're just saying 48 and 7, that's it? Now, our note continues, Besoichom, within these angular brackets, Yesh Diyun Bashela Loma Lo Oimrim Halel Bepurim. The Gemara will be dealing with this question, why don't we have a formal recitation of the Halel prayer on Purim? We say Halel on Hanukkah, we say Hallel on Pesach, we say Hallel on the other holidays. Why not on Purim? Now, we have on the side, the other side of the Gemara, we have a Nosei Mivneh heading. I hope everyone sees that. We feature a house marking. These are tshuvos. When you see the house shape appears, these are tshuvos la-sheila, lama lo-imrim Hallel b'Purim. They're answers to the question of why is it that we don't say Hallel on Purim. So just to go over the structure again, after the bracketed section, the Gemara will go back and deal with the issue of the numbers of prophets. Within the brackets, the focus is on the issue of Hallel, not the non-recitation of Hallel on the holiday of Purim. That having been said, we go right into the bracketed section. The Gemara asks, Ihachi Hallel Nami Nemo. Well, if so, should we not say Hallel as well on Purim? Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, so Rabbi Yitzchak answers, Lefi she'ein oimrim halel al neis shebechutza ba'aretz. We don't say halel regarding miracles or salvation through miracles in things that took place outside the land of Israel. Now, our internal brackets. Notice we have a double starred note. It says, Matras HaSugrayim, the dilug, the purpose of these brackets is for an initial skipping. Kedei lishma retzef hatshuvos la'sheila lama lo imrim halel b'purim. By skipping this, so we keep track of the series of answers. So number two, you see after the brackets is Rav Nachman, Omar kriyasa zu halilo. I don't have to recite halel separately. The rest of the reading of the Megillas Esther itself is a form of halel. By reading the Megillah, and publicizing the miracle that HaKadosh Baruch Hu performed for us, we are in effect praising the Almighty. The third answer, you see Rava says, and he goes on, and we'll get to that later. We go back now to the curved brackets, the brace marking. Within the brace, you see the Gemara is going to be asking on what Rabbi Yitzchak said. What did Rabbi Yitzchak say? He says that we don't say Hallel on miracles that happen outside of Israel. So the Gemara asks, V'harei Yitzias Mitzrayim, D'neis Shebechutzo La'aretz, V'arinan Halela. The exodus from Mitzrayim was a miracle that obviously took place outside the land of Israel, and we say Hallel. The Gemara responds, Hosam Kidisanya. There, in the case of Pesach, is explained in the following Tanaic source. Ad shelo nichnasu Yisrael la'aretz, before, prior to the Jews entering the land, huchshiru kol arotzos lomar shira. So all countries were candidates, were fit for having shira. Shira is a term interchangeable with halel. Shira, or halel, was capable of being, was eligible to be recited. However, Mishinichnusu Yisrael Oretz, upon the entrance of the Jews to the land of Israel, Lo Huchshiru Kol HaRotzos Lo Marshira. So all other lands were no longer suitable for Hallel recitation. So that, with that answer in mind, the fact that Hallel is said on the leaving of Egypt is not a question. It doesn't pose an objection to Rabbi Yitzchak's point. We continue. Rav Nachman Omar, Kriyasazu Halela. If your question is why don't we say Hallel, so we are reading the Megillah instead of saying Hallel. Rava Omar, Bishlama Hasam. Rava says, I can understand over there, with regard to Mitzrayim, Halulu Avdei Hashem, Velo Avdei Paro. That when it comes to the departure from Mitzrayim, so there we are no longer enslaved to Paro, we're completely free. Free to serve the Almighty. And it's over us, over a situation like that where we're no longer bound to some other force other than the Almighty, we say Hallel. Elohocha. But in the case of Purim, Hallelu Avdei Hashem Velo Avdei Achashverosh, can we really say that we are the servants of the Almighty and not bound anymore to Achashverosh? Kati Avdei Achashverosh Anan. At the end of the Megillah, you can see that we are still enslaved and still under the thumb, under the rule of Achashverosh. We're not free without any other foreign force other than the Almighty Himself. So therefore, Purim is not a time that's suitable for the Hallel recitation. The Pasuk, just to repeat ourselves, the Pasuk in Hallel says, Hallelu Avdei Hashem, which is saying we are beholden only to the Almighty. So when that is the case, so you say Hallel. When you find yourself beholden to some other force as well, like Achashverosh, so Hallel recitation is simply not suitable. The Gemara continues. Bein l'Rava, bein l'Rav Nachman, Kashya. Whether you take the approach of Rava or the approach of Rav Nachman, that according to them, in theory, Hallel Purim is suitable for Hallel. Again, let's emphasize in potential. All Rav Nachman said was that instead of saying Hallel, which you could have said, we read the Megillah. Rava said, Purim is a time that had we been totally freed, we would have said Hallel. It's just that we were still bound to Achashverosh. But in potential, Purim was suitable for a Hallel recitation, if not for the factors we just mentioned. So now, in light of that, V'hotanya, but do we not have a Tanaic source that which has more authority than the Amoroim, Rav and Rav Nachman, and it says, Mishenichnesu la'aretz, lo huchshiru kol arotzos lo marshira. that once the Jews entered the land of Israel, all other lands were canceled. There's no more hallel recitation regarding miracles out there. So Rav Nachman and Rava don't have to try to like waste their time giving other explanations. Purim took place after the Jews had already entered the land of Israel in the time of Yoshua, the time of after the Exodus from Mitzrayim. So there's no point in trying to justify our non-saying of hallel. It's simple. It's the simple answer is like we saw before, Rav Yitzchok said. The Gemara answers that that's, in the eyes of Rav Nachman and Rava, that's not true. Kevon Shegolu, once they were exiled, and that was what happened after Bavel destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, the Jews were exiled. Chozru Lehechsheron Harishon. The Chozru is the other lands, the Shara Rotzos, return to their original status of being, yes, candidates for Shira recitation based on miracles that happen there. So then, if you accept that, well, so Rav Nachman gives his answer, nevertheless, we don't say Hallel because we're reading the Megillah, and Rava says Hallel is inappropriate because we were still bound to Achashverosh. And that point is quite evident when you look at the end of Megillas Esther. And now, as we mentioned before, we go back to the issue of numbers of prophets. We have on the side a topic heading, the Nosei, Kamo Nevi'im Hoyu Yisrael. How many prophets served the Jewish people? So the Gemara asks, Vesu Leka. And here we have an arrow. Use the arrow. You can navigate with this and try to find the arrow above. And you find there it's pointing to the line that said there were 48 prophets and 7 prophetesses. Well, were there no more? Vehoksiv. There's a pasuk that says, "Vayhi ish echad min horosayim tzofim." This pasuk is, as you can see, from the very beginning of the book of Samuel, Sefer Shmuel, and it mentions there was a man from Ramosayim. The man referred to is Elkanah, the father of Shmuel Hanavi. And the Gemara darshins this pasuk echad min horosayim as follows: Echad mimosayim tzofim. Tzofim means visionaries or prophets. Shenisnabu lohem liYisrael. He was one of 200 prophets. So what are you telling me? There were only 48. Here you see a much larger number. The Gemara answers, mihava tuvo havu. There were in fact many more. Kidisanya, and then we'll explain how they were going to resolve both points here. There were many more. On the other hand, why then do we mention 48? Well, the following source says, Kidisanya harbe neviim omdu lehem liYisrael kiflam kiyotzi Mitzrayim. There were many prophets over the ages that arose to say prophecy. Twice kiflam, twice the number of redeemed from Egypt. How many were redeemed from Egypt? So we know the number, the Torah gives us the number of over 600,000 males above the age of 20. So if you use that number as your base, twice that is 1.2 million, 1,200,000 prophets served the people of Israel over the ages. So there were, in fact, many more than 48. When we spoke above about 48 prophets, we're talking about 48 prophets and their recorded prophecies that are found in the scriptures. So as far as that is concerned, nevuah that has relevance for future generations, that's, we'll call it timeless type prophecy, that is what we were referring to. That's the recorded prophecy. So you have 48 prophets that are recorded as having said prophecy that has bearing for future generations. That which was needed only for that particular generation in which the prophet said his prophecy, so that was not recorded. And as far as actual prophets are concerned, there were many, many more than 48. Prophets, of course, are those people that receive a communication from the Almighty with the charge of what they are receiving from the Almighty and then to say it over to the population. We didn't note before, but we started a numbering system. You can see diamonds, and the reason for these are explained on the side under our Mivneh heading. You can see we feature diamonds 1 through 3. Droshos al haposuk echod min haramasayim. We started number one, the posuk referring to Elkanah, the father of Shmuel. Now another drasha on that word, or that expression of echod min haramasayim, Rav Shmuel bar Nachmeni Omar. Adam habo mishtei ramois shetsoifois zu lezu. The word rama or ramos are hills. So it's a man that comes from a place where you have two hills facing one another, that look upon one another. That's min haramosayim, two hills that face one another. Rav Chonin Omar, Adam habo mi bnei Adam sheoimdin berumoi shalom. The word ramosayim means that is in the heights of the world. Now we'll see what that means shortly. So Rav Chonin says that Elkanah was a descendant from people that stand in this rumo shalalam. The word rumo literally means lofty place, but this is lofty relative, shortly relative to purgatory. Who are the people that were Elkanah's ancestors? They were the sons of Korach. Korach, famous, there's a parsha in the Torah named for him. He was the one that led a rebellion against Moshe Rabbeinu, and he and his men were swallowed up in the earth. And the Gemara continues on this point, Uman Ninu, who are those people that are Omdim Berumo Shalom? Those are the Bnei Korach, the sons of Korach. Dichtiv Uvnei Korach Loi Mesu. Pasuk says that the sons of Korach did not die. And that's explained a little further. Tono Mishum Rabbeinu, the following source was taught over. Mokom Nisbatzer Lem BeGehenim VeOmdu Olav. When the earth swallowed up Korach's men, Korach's family, there was a shelf that was formed, so to speak, in purgatory, and they didn't descend into the depths of purgatory, and they Omdu Olav, and they stood on that shelf. So that those are people that are this very unusual location, Berumo Shalom, the heights of the world. As we said before, they're on a shelf that's suspended way above or above purgatory, so that they are those that are referred to in this pasuk, that Elkanah is from Ramosayim, people that come from Ramah, from those that are on this shelf that's high above Berumo, in the heights of the world, above purgatory. Again, as we've said many times in our Gemara Mark and Shurim, this is a very abstract idea. Should one attempt to take this literally, I'm not sure it'll be too easy to comprehend. Hence, understand that this is a reference to something of a mystical or abstract nature that one would have to study much further to gain more appreciation. But for our purposes, we are darshaning what does Echad min haramasayim mean. So this was a third pshat, Rav Chonin's pshat. Sheva Nevi'as Manu. Now we turn to the topic of the prophetesses. How many? There were seven. There were. Who were they? So the Gemara lists them off: Sarah, Miriam, Devorah, Hannah, Abigail, Huldah, VeEsther. Now, as we go on in the Gemara is very highly structured. Each one of these women are featured as a separate discussion. The bow tie marking that you see highlights the Shemos Hanavios. So before we go on in the Gemara, by all means, scan ahead. See if you can see where the bow ties appear. So we have Sarah, two lines later, Miriam. A few lines later, you see Devorah, Chano, Abigail. Now, Abigail was the fifth bow tie that you see. So we're looking for two more, and we go to Omid Beis, and you see the upper third of the page Huldah, and the bottom third of the page, the beginning of line, you see Esther. We turn to the Gemara. Sarah Dichtiv. How do we know that Sarah was a prophetess? The Pasuk says Avi Milka V'Avi Yiska. This is a pasuk in the end of Parshas Noach. The Omer of Yitzchok Yisko Zu Sora, in describing Horon there in the Chumash. Horon was of course Avram Avinu's brother, so it mentions that Nochor and Avram, the brothers of Avram, they had taken for them wives. Who were the wives that Nochor and Avraham had chosen. So Nochor, this one brother of Avram, took Milcah, and Avram himself took Yiscah. These were the daughters of their third brother, Haran. So you have basically uncles marrying their nieces. And in describing, in referring to Yiscah, which is the name you see in the Torah, the Rabbi Yitzchak tells us, Zu Sarah. That was, in fact, Sarah, that she had two names. One was the same woman, Sarah, was called either Sarah or Yiscah. Veloma nikra shmo Yiscah. If her name is Sarah, why is she called Yiscah? She sachsa beruach hakodesh. She was covered, possibly like the word sukkah. She was covered. She was enveloped in divine inspiration. Shenema, the pasuk says, Kol asher toimar elecha Sara shma bekola. Whatever Sarah tells you, says the Almighty to Avram, so listen to her voice. And when it says listen to her voice, this is basically means listen to the voice of prophecy that comes forth from her. Dovar acher Yiscah. Another approach to the name Yiscah is Shakol Soichin Be Yofio. Everyone would bathe in her beauty, so to speak. Or the word Soichin really means they gazed upon her beauty. Now we continue in the Gemara. Miriam, how do we know that she was a prophet? Dichtiv. Vatikach Miriam Hanavio Achois Aharon. The Pasuk says that describes Miriam as the sister of Aaron. So we ask, Achois Aaron velo Achois Moshe. We know that Miriam was the sister not only of Aaron, but also the sister of Moshe. Why does the Pasuk then describe her as the sister of Aaron? Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Rav. Now notice this is a long answer. We have a long answer marking here. Rav Nachman says in the name of Rav, Shoisa Misnabo, she was saying prophecy kishehi achos Aaron, when she was in effect the sister of only Aaron. Namely, before Moshe Rabbeinu was born, she was the sister of her brother Aaron. And that's it. The Omeris, and what prophecy was she saying at that point? Asido imi shetele ben shiyoshia es Yisrael. She prophesied that my mother will bear a child that will save Israel. Ubishah shenoilad nismala kol abayas kuloi oira. And when Moshe was born, the house became filled with light. Omar avio vinoshka al rosha. Her father, Amram, he got up and he kissed her on her head, Omar lo, and he set her biti niskaimo nivuasech. I see that your prophecy has been fulfilled. In other words, with the unusual event of the house being filled with light, this indicated to Amram that this is the child that she prophesied that will save Israel. The Kevon Shishlichu Lior, but shortly thereafter, a couple months later, when they threw him into the river, Omad Oviyav Tovchal Rosha, her father got up he hit her on her head, and he said, "Be'omar lo," and he said, "Biti, heichan nevuasech? Where'd your prophecy go?" In other words, he saw that the boy was being cast into the water. That seemed to be his end. No salvation from this kid. Hainu dichtiv, and it's with that you have this in mind. The pasuk says, "Vatei satzav achoisoi meirochoik l'deya." It describes Miriam as standing by the water's edge to see what was going to happen. Now, what is it? Ladea, what? Ladas, to know, Mayahe Basof Nivuasa, what's going to really be with the end of her Nivua? So, as everyone knows, the child was saved, and he was raised, and eventually became Moshe Rabbeinu. Devorah, we mentioned the third prophetess in our list of seven is Devorah, Dechtivu Devorah, Isha Neviyah, Eshes Lapidos. Here the Pasuk is explicit. She was an Isha Neviyah. She was a woman of prophecy. My Eshes Lapidos. What does that expression mean? Now, if you translate it literally, it would mean she was the wife of a man by the name of Lapidos. But the Gemara sees in this something to darshan. So what does it mean, the woman of Lapidos? The word lapid is a torch. So the pasuk is describing Devorah as a woman that prepared wicks for the Mikdash. The Mikdash in her time, in effect, was the Mishkan, but we know from other Gemaras that the term Mishkan and Mikdash are actually interchangeable terms. So she was making wicks for use in the Beis HaMikdash. Hence, she's called Ashes Lapidos. The Pasuk says, by Devorah v'yosheves tachas tomer, my shno tachas tomer. The Pasuk says she sat under a palm tree. What's the significance of her sitting under a palm tree? Could have just said she sat under a tree. Now, so the Gemara explains that she sat there when people came to her for counsel or for judgment. Omar Rabbi Shimon ben Avishalom, Mishum Yichud. The nature of the palm tree is that its branches extend upwards, as opposed to, let's say, a willow tree or maybe a eucalyptus tree. These are trees, there are certain types of trees whose branches come downwards and would if you were sitting at the trunk at the base of such a tree, so you'd be in an enclosed area. Not so with the palm tree. The palm tree's branches are way above the trunk, so that sitting there she would not be in seclusion. Yichud means a man other than one's wife, a man alone with another woman. That's something that is prohibited. So she, being a woman, anticipated men coming to seek her counsel, and she wanted to avoid this sin of being biyichud, being in seclusion with another man. Hence, she chose to locate herself under a palm tree, and as we described, the branches would not create a situation of seclusion. Dovar acher, ma tomor ze, another approach to what the significance of the palm tree is, ma tomor ze ein lo elo lev echod. The nature of the palm tree is that it has what's called only one heart. This has to do with something that's unique to the palm tree from a botanical standpoint. The palm tree has its, we'll call the nutrients, run up the trunk of the palm tree, but they don't extend the system that's characteristic of other trees is not so with the case of the palm, because the branches of the palm do not relate to the trunk the same way that the branches of other trees relate to their trunk. And that's the idea. It has only one heart. Its heart, so to speak, is concentrated in its trunk. The Rashi talks about the sap of the palm tree runs up its trunk, and it doesn't run into its branches, unlike other trees. So the significance of this unity, of this singularness, is something that is unique to the palm tree. So Af Yisrael Shabbos Sador, so to the Jews in that generation, Lo Hoyo Lohem Elo Lev Echod Laviem Sheba Shemaim, their hearts were singular in their devotion to the Almighty. They were unified, they didn't have, disparate allegiances. Chana Dichtiv. Now we go to the next prophetess. The pasuk says, "Vatispalo Chana Vatoimer Olatz Libi Bashem Roma Karni Bashem." And from this pasuk, as the more we'll explain, we'll see that she had prophecy. And shortly, you will see that she prophesizes concerning David and Shlomo HaMelech, as opposed to, they were both kings, David and his son Shlomo, as opposed to two other kings, Shaul and Yehu. Now, what's the where do we see prophecy here? So in this pasuk, she says, "Roma Karni Bashem." Roma karni velo roma pachi. A keren is a horn. A pach is a flask. A horn of an animal, as maybe you've seen in pictures or have read about it, it can A horn can hold liquids. In our case, we're going to talk about the horn holding anointing oil. Anointing oil, oil used to anoint kings. A pach is a simple flask that also obviously holds liquids. So she says that may my horn be raised and not my flask. What does that mean? David uShlomo sheNimshechu beKeren Nimshecha Malchusan. David and Shlomo, who were anointed by oil that was stored in a horn, their kingdom lasted. We call the Davidic dynasty. It's a lineage that started with David HaMelech and continues, and of course we are of the belief that Moshiach is called Moshiach ben David. He's a descendant from that household, which will represent a new, or the continuation of that original kingdom. So the kingdom of David and Shlomo lasts. Shol v'yehu shenimshechu b'pach lo nimshechu malchusan. Shol, King Saul, and Yehu, also featured in Sefer Melachim, they represented kings, but their dynasties, their descendants, did not continue in rulership, and they happen to have been anointed with oil that was came from a pach, this other kind of flask. So what Hannah was saying was she was prophesying that the Davidic dynasty, that is a dynasty that will last. The other kings, Shaul and Yehu, they will not last. And of course Hannah lived many years before these events. Ein kodosh kashem ki ein biltecha. This is a part of Chana's prayer, and that's the pasuk. She said, "Amar of Yudah bar Menashe, al turki biltecha." Don't read the word as biltecha, ela leval loisecha. Leval loisecha means something that gets worn out, and she's what is she saying in this pasuk? Shelo kamidas kodesh baruch hu minas baser adam. The attributes of the Almighty are not like those of man. Midas Boser V'dom, Maisi Yodov Mevalin Oso. When it comes to mankind, man makes things. A man, let's say, makes a statue, he builds a building, a palace, a castle. Those things outlive the one that made them. Man made it, but man does not outlive those things that he makes. Aval HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mevala Maisi Yodov. But the Almighty, who is above time, who is eternal, so he makes things, but he, of course, continues. He outlasts them. The Ein Sur Kelokenu, again a pasuk from Chana. Ein, it's the word Sur is Tsayor, a craftsman Kelokenu. There is no craftsman like the Almighty. Odom Tsar Tsura Gabi Hakoisel. A person can make an image on a wall. He can make a carving on a wall. V'einu yochol lahatil bo ruach u'neshama kirvayim b'neayim. But he can't place life, ruach neshama, the spirit, and he can't place the spirit nor a soul, innards and digestive organs into the image that he made, that he carved on the wall. Even though that which he carved was quite external, quite accessible to him, but he can't put life into the image that he makes. Avol HaKadosh Baruch Hu Tzor Tzura B'Tzoch Tzura. The Kodesh Baruch Hu, he forms an image within an image. Talk about a developing fetus inside his mother. So the Kodesh Baruch Hu is responsible for that formation. Umatil Bo Ruach Uneshama Kirvayim Bneayim, and he puts into it the spirit of life plus its internal organs, all within another existing image. That is something that's phenomenal, of course. Avigail, Dichtiv. What about Avigail? She was in our list of prophetesses, number 5. Dichtiv, Vahoya. Now, where do we see prophecy on her part? The Pasuk says, Vahoyahi rocheves ala chamor v'yoredes b'seser hahor. Now, just we should say maybe a word or two about Avigail. This is a woman who's featured in Sefer Shmuel. She was originally the wife of a gentleman by the name of Novol HaKarmeli. Her husband turned out to be a wicked man, a man that eventually we see that he was worthy of being killed, and David HaMelech, who who was affronted by this gentleman, Nabal, was nevertheless, Nabal was spared because of the intervention of Nabal's wife, Abigail. Now, eventually, Nabal died, and Abigail ended up marrying David HaMelech. Now, that's just the story in headlines. For more information, of course, by all means, look into the Book of Samuel, Perek Chof Hei. Shmuel Aleph Perek Chof Hei. So it says in the Pasuk that she was riding on a donkey, and Yoredes Beseser Ahar. So the language of the Pasuk is a bit unusual. Beseser Ahar, Min Ahar, Mibaleh. She was descending Min Ahar, descending from the mountain. What is the word Beseser? Beseser means something that's hidden. So Omar Rabba Bar Shmuel Al Iske Dam Habo Min Hastorim. Abigail was approaching David in this story with dam. Dam is blood. Blood in this case is a reference to the woman's monthly female cycle, which is an issue that at times needs, we'll say, rabbinic decisions made concerning, is the dam from the woman's rechem, from her uterus, which would then make it such that the woman who experienced this sighting is then tamea, but it could be blood that comes maybe internal, but not from that particular part of her anatomy, and she would not be tamea. And someone who is skilled in blood recognition can decide on that status. So, Notla, Rabbi Bar Shmuel says that the word Baseser is a reference to blood that comes from, star means a closed and internal, a hidden part of the body. Of course, according to what we explained, you understand it's an internal issue of blood. Not lo dam vehera solo. She took blood and showed it to him. And David, actually, we know from the beginning of Maseches Brachos, David was someone who had expertise in this area of a blood judgment. So she showed it to him. Omar lo. So David says to Abigail, v'chimarin dam balayla. Do we show blood at night? This story took place in the nighttime hours, and you need light in order to make a decision concerning blood. And nighttime, you have the absence of natural light. Hence, it's not fit for making judgments on this topic. Omro lo. So Abigail said to David, well, just like you don't want to judge this question of blood, the chidonin dine nefoshos balayla, are you going to sentence Nabal to death, which is an issue of capital case? Dine nefoshos represents capital cases. Do you judge them at night? And of course, without getting into details, Rashi gives some background to that judgment of capital cases takes place by day, not by night. So what are you, Abigail says to David, what are you judging Nabal to sentence him to death? Omar law. So David responds, and we continue at the top of Omid Beis. Moreid b'malchusu v'lot tzorach l'medayne. He is rebelling against the king. I've been anointed as a king, and he is rebelling against me by not. If you look in the storyline, he wasn't going to provide food for David and his men, so he's rebelling. V'lot tzorach l'medayne, and as such, there's a special category of law called moreid b'malchus, and he does not need to be judged. Now, there's an interesting discussion that we're not going to get to in the context of Gemara markings, but the Tosfos at the top of this Amud touches on this topic, citing a number of different sources that, for those who are familiar, might find very interesting. But for our purposes, we're going to keep it simple, and that Moreid B'Malchus does not require standard rules of judgment. And hence, I know it's night, but nevertheless, he's Moreid B'Malchus, and he can be judged. Omra loy, so Abigail responds, Adayin Shol Kayom. At this point in history, King Saul, Shol, was still alive. V'lo yotze tivacho ba'olam, and your reputation, your fame, has not become known yet. So that, it's true, technically speaking, you might have been anointed a king, but to call Nabal a knowing rebeller against the king, you can't do that. You can't say that because he doesn't know that you're the king. Omar law, Boruch ta'amech ubrucho at asher kilisani hayoim hazeh miboy bedamim. Blessed be you, says David to Abigail, that you have saved me today from entering domim, entering blood. And the Gemara explains, my mibo bedamim. What does that mean, to enter blood? Trei domim. Two issues of blood. Dam nida u'shvichus domim. You saved me from stumbling on two matters. Now the two matters, the second one is shvichus domim. You saved me from killing someone that maybe, as you say, should not be killed. So I didn't violate killing, and we'll say killing an innocent man. Now the issue of dam nida, how do we see that he was saved from dam nida? Malame, the Gemara explains, Shegilsa Ashoika Veholach Le'oira Gimel Parsos. Now before we can translate that, let's just point out that the Gemara elaborates on this in the next couple of lines. So first we'll translate and also issue a word of disclaimer. The Gemara says, Malame Shegilsa Ashoika. Now translate it means that she revealed her thigh, and some type of miraculous thing took place, and it created a glow of light that was so strong that he was able to walk in the dark a distance of 3 parsa. Okay, that's a literal translation. I'm not sure that you would want to stop with that alone, but let's go a little further with that and say that, again, if you translate that she revealed her thigh, so she was revealing her female beauty to David, and that certainly that would cause a person, a man, to be aroused. Now Tosfos takes exception though to this, and he says in the Dibra Masrug Shagilso Shoikovot David Leuro Gimel Parsos Kosha. He asks, this is hard to understand. Hech Oisit Sadekis, Tosfos asks, how could this righteous woman, Abigail, was known as a she's a prophetess, makes her a very righteous woman. How could she go so shekel if they dove? How could she do such a thing? It's very immodest on the part of a woman to do such a thing. Also, it seems exaggerated that he walked from the light of her thigh 3 parsa, v'yesh lomar, and Tosfos then responds and says, the nimsa b'svar miduyakim shenokubem le'oira klomar le'or shelah. The different version that appears in more accurate works, that le'ora doesn't mean her thigh, but le'or shelah, through her light. Pirush nis'avela David. David actually had a desire for her. V'alach be'or chamimus shelah. Chamimus shalosh parsos, and he was, I don't know if the word is infatuated, if that's the right word, but he became overcome by desire for her, and that he was heated up, so to speak, for a time frame that would take 3 parsa to cover. So that is a more tenable approach. Other than, as we said, the literal translation approach that we gave to the Gemara. So we turn back to the Gemara. Omar Law. We're using to follow the speakers, you see we've been using the squiggle underline, so the story continues. Hashmi'ili, David, and we saw from the Tosfos that he was overcome by a desire for her. So David says, Hashmi'ili, yield to me, which has all kinds of overtones or ramifications. He really wants to be with her. Omar Omro Lo, so she says to him, Lo tiezos l'cha l'fuka. Do not allow this to be a point of stumbling. Now, what might very well have been the case, that she was saying, you know, I'm still a married woman, and it's quite forbidden for me to be with someone else, and therefore take yourself into control and don't allow yourself to stumble over this matter. Now the word zos we're going to emphasize. We dashed, underlined it. Zos. Don't let this be a stumbling. Michlal de'iko achriti. There must have been some other thing, other event that over which he did stumble. Umay nihu. And what was that? Maise de Bas Sheva. Umaskona Hachi Havoi. There was an incident later on with Dovid HaMelech and his taking of Bas Sheva, which is a topic that needs a lot of analysis, and we're not going to be able to spend time on it now. But David did actually take Bas Sheva, who had been a woman that was married to Uriah Hachiti. Exactly what happened there was, in fact, she was really divorced at the time, is a subject worthy of great analysis. However, that story was not sin free in the total sense of the word, whereas here he was prevented from any form of sin. And so that's what she is saying to David. Don't let this be an incident of stumbling. And the Gemara says, this, okay, but there's some other incident that wasn't. And you can see here the prophecy within her, that the story of Bathsheba was an example of something where he did stumble. And it's on this point that Rashi says we see her prophecy capacity. Kihavis miftara mine. Omro lay, when they departed from one another, Abigail from David, she says, Vehitiv Hashem ladoni, vezocharto es amosecha. And she left him with a blessing, Hashem should deal kindly with you, and remember me, she says to him. Abigail says to them, remember me. Omar Rav Nachman, Hainu Damri Inchi, it's based on this, that people say, Itza Bahadi Shuta Pilcha. A woman, while she is speaking, shusa has to do with speech, while she's speaking, pilcha, she's engaged in the spinning of wool. So Rashi explains, bahadi shusa pilcha, im shoisha medaberes, hi toiva. Well, a woman can do two things at once. She can speak and also do and spin wool at the same time. Klomar, im shi medaberes imo al baila. While she's talking to David about her husband, his kiralo es atzma, sheim yomus naval yisaena. She's trying to say to him that if anything happens to Naval, if he dies, so I want you to marry me. Ika the Amri. Another version of this, the pasuk said v'zochartes amosecha. Another saying that people have is shofil v'ozil bar avza v'einoyi mitayfi. The bar avzo is a type of bird, maybe a goose. It walks in such a way that it's bent over, but its neck is bent over, or its head is bent over, but its eyes peer forward, look into the distance. So to over here, she was looking into the distance that remember me, because sometime in the future, I want to be with you. I want you to marry me. Hulda, we see that she is described as she's one of the prophetesses, number 6. Tehtiv, Vayelech Hukio, Akein, Vachikom, Vachbor, El Hulda, Hanavi. Again, you have a pasuk where she is described explicitly as a prophetess. The Gemara asks, with a historical perspective, Hulda lived at the same time as the more famous prophet Yirmiyahu. We're talking about a time period at the end of the first temple period. The Gemara asks, "V'makom dekoy Yirmiyahu hechi misnabia hi?" In a time, in a place where you have a prophet the likes of Yirmiyahu, so how is it that she is saying prophecy? Amri Bei Rav Mishmei De Rav. It was said in the name of Rav, Chulda Kroivas Yirmiya Hoysa, V'lo Hava Makbid Oleo. Chulda was a relative of Yirmiya, so he wouldn't be upset by virtue of the family connection if she says prophecy. Another question, though. V'yoshia Gufei Hechi Shavik Yirmiya Umeshader Legaba. The king Yoshio had sent these men we mentioned above in the pasuk, Chukya Koyin, Achikam, and Achbor, to Chulda. Well, why did the king Yoshio send his men to Chulda when he could have sent them to Yirmiyahu? So, in order to answer this, we have a couple approaches. Number one, Amri Debei Rabbi Shilo, Bnei Shanoshim Rachmonios Hain. The king sent his men to specifically a woman, because women are portrayed as being more merciful. So that maybe something of a more positive, more merciful nature would come forth from her. Rabbi Yochanan says, Yirmiyo lo have hosam. Yirmiyo was not there. In other words, the king needed counsel. And if you're asking, well, why didn't the king send his men to Yirmiyo? Because he wasn't there. Shalach lahachzir aseres ha-shvotim. Yirmiyo, as we said, lived at the end of the first temple period. Several scores of years before that, we know that Sanherib, the Assyrian emperor, had come and exiled the northern kingdom, the 10 northern tribes of Israel. Yirmiyo went to seek them out, to bring them back to the land. So, simply speaking, he was not available. Now, we have a marking. So we have a bracketed section. You can see the bracket, the length of this section. And on the side, we have a note, the starred note. Ein sograim elu l'shem diluk. These brackets are not for skipping purposes. Elu l'tachem, to show the boundaries, the extent. L'tachem oirech haketa sheboi mochiach ha-gemar shirmiyo holach lahachzir aser sashvat. The Gemara is going to be involved with this topic of Yirmiyo being going out to restore, to return the 10, what we call today the 10 lost tribes. Apparently in Yirmiyo's time they weren't exactly lost. He knew where to go to get them back. On the side, on the other side of the Gemara, we have a nosei, besograyim, mivne heading. That means a topic that we have in the brackets, with a structural note as well. We'll see diamonds appearing in the upcoming section. So we've written on the side, Shnei Hoichochois, two proofs. Menolon di Yirmiyo anovi holach v'ichzir aseres ha-shvotim shegolu u'molach aleim Yoshua HaMelech. From where do we know that Yirmiyo went to seek the 10 exiled tribes, to bring them back and have then King Yoshiyahu ruling over them? Here, as we mentioned before, we alluded to this before, that it's helpful to have some historical perspective, certainly by having one who has learned the Tanakh, specifically of the Book of Kings, would be aware, familiar with these different personalities. When we speak about toward the end of the first Beis Hamikdash period, we're talking about a number of different kings that ruled at the time that Yirmiyo was serving as a prophet, and amongst those kings was Yoshiyahu, who was a great grandson of King Chizkiyo. Yoshiyahu was called the son of Amon, who was the son of Menashe, who was the son of Chizkiyo HaMelech, if that helps at all for any historical perspective. So now, as we said, we'll pick up later with the last prophetess, Esther. But before that, mention was just made by Rabbi Yochanan concerning the prophet Yirmiyo as simply not having been there, accessible to the men sent by King Yoshiyo. So they went to Huldah. Where was Yirmiyo? So we said he went to seek the return of the 10 lost tribes. The Gemara asks, Uminola Dahadu, we're at the beginning of the bracketed section, from where do we know that he brought them back? Tichtiv, the Pasuk says. Now, here, before we can go on in the Gemara, we have to mention just a word of introduction. Everyone has probably heard of the term Jubilee, the Jubilee year. In Hebrew, we call that the Yovel. In Halacha, the Yovel year represents a time at which people who purchased land from original owners, the land is restored, is given back to the original owner. This law applies when all of the Jewish people inhabit the land of Israel. What we say, Kol Yoshevei Aleha. In a situation that you would, let's say, have 10 tribes, 10 out of the 12 tribes exiled, so the laws of Yovel would not apply. And hence, if you purchased land, and uh, the,
the Jubilee year passed, that would have no halachic ramification because the Kol Yoshevel are not there. They've been exiled. That's by way of background. Now, we turn to the Gemara. We're asking, how do we know that Yirmiyahu brought back the 10 tribes? Dichtiv. The Pasuk says, Ki ha-moicher el ha-memkar lo yoshuv. There's prophecy stated that the seller of his land will not return to his land. Efshir yoivel botel v'novi misnabilov she yivatel. Would it make sense that Yovel was botel, meaning with the exile of the 10 tribes, we know in the time of Sancheirev, who was many scores of years before Yirmiyahu, that at the time of Sancheirev, the 10 tribes were exiled. So could it be that Yovel was no longer binding, that it was botel, that it was void? And the prophet Yechezkel would prophesy about its eventual voiding? That doesn't make sense. If something is no longer binding, that's it. End of story. What are you prophesying about its eventual voiding? Elom Elame. This shows us. This prophecy from Yechezkel was a very late prophet. He was a prophet that was certainly at the end of the first Beis Hamikdash time period, and he is prophesizing, Elo Malamed She Yirmiyahu Hechziron. Actually, Yirmiyahu did return the lost tribes. He brought them back to Israel. V'Yoshio ben Amoin Molach Aleim, and King Yoshio ruled over them. So at that point in time, the laws of Yovel came back into practice. So it's regarding that period of time that the prophet Yechezkel, who was a contemporary of Yirmiyahu, that he was prophesying that Yovel will eventually become voided. And we said that, we just said that from the Pasuk in Yechezkel, we see then that the 10 tribes must have been brought back and that Yoshio ruled over them. Dichtiv. The Pasuk says regarding Yoshio, it says, Vayomer, Mahatziyun haloz asher ani roe. What is this grave marker that I see? Vayomru elov anshioir. And the people that were there said, of the people of that city, said to the king, Hakever ishu elokim asher bom Yehuda. This is the grave of the man of God, the prophet that came from the Yehuda province. Vayikras etvorim oela asher osiso al Hamizbach beveisel. We dashed underlined the place Beisel. Beisel was north of Yehuda, the southern kingdom. Vechimat tivoi shel Yoshio al hamizbeach beveisel. What's the nature of Yoshio, who was a king from a descendant of the Davidic dynasty, originally had ruled after the death of Shlomo Melech, after Rechavob came into power, they ruled only over the southern part of Israel. And here you have a descendant from the Davidic dynasty who is there in Beisel. What's he doing over there? Ela melamed sheyosho molach aleim. This shows us that he belonged there because he ruled over them. He ruled over the northern kingdom. And as we said, that's all a function of the success of Yirmiyahu in bringing the 10 tribes back. And as such, the king of the time, there was no longer a split kingdom because the northern kingdom was dissolved, and the king that ruled over them at this time was Yoshio. Rav Nachman Omer Mehocha. From here we see that Yoshio ruled over them. Gam Yehuda Shos Kotziloch B'Shuvi Shvus Ami. And the word Kotzir is a Loshen of Gedula, so that the region of Yehuda and its king ruled over with the return, Beshuvi, the return of my captive nation, the northern tribes that had been exiled. Now, you see another bow tie, Esther, number 7, Esther Dechti, Vayibiyom HaShlishi, Vatilbash Esther Malchus. How do we know she was a prophetess? Well, we read this Pasuk, and it says that she clothed herself the Malchus. Big day Malchus, if you want to be, if the Pasuk is talking about someone putting on clothing, it should have said, Vatilbash Esther Big Day Malchus. She put on the royal clothing. Clothing should have been in the expression. Ela, so what does the pasuk mean? She loved v'shasa ruach hakodesh. She was clothed in divine inspiration and prophecy. Ksiv hocha. Now, how do you know that? How do you know that from reading this pasuk? Well, by word comparison, it says here v'til bash uksiv hosam ruach lavsha es amosai v'chule, and in that pasuk, the ruach lovsha is a reference to divine inspiration overcame Amosai. Likewise, with regard to Esther, she was overcome with divine inspiration with prophecy. Omar Rav Nachman lo yoeh yehirusa lenoshi. Yehirusa is an expression that sometimes is translated as haughtiness. Rashi says lo noa yuharo lenoshi lo noa chashivus lenoshim. Tarti noshi yehiron havyon. There were two women that had this had say an office of chashivus of literally chashivus has to do with importance, with the prominence. So that Rav Nachman is saying that offices of prominence are not befitting women. There were two women that had this about them, the Sanyon Shmayu, and their names are, Rashi says Shmosim Usos, their names are disgusting. Well, what do we mean by that? Chado Shmo Ziburta v'chada shmo karkushta. One is called Devorah. Well, Devorah is a bee. And the other one is called Karkushta. So her name is, Karkushta is in Aramaic what we might call a weasel. Some type of rodent, a burrowing rodent. That's a reference to Huldah. Now, where do we see this phenomenon of Yehirusa? And we mentioned before in passing that Yehirusa can also be translated, as is the case in many other Gemaras, haughtiness. Ziburta, Ksivba, regarding Devorah, it says, Vatishlach, Vatikra, LeBarak. She sent for Barak. Barak was a leadership figure in his time. Barak ben Avinoam, he was, when you look at the psukim, he appears to be a general, but we'll refer to him as a leadership figure. And she sent for him, v'ilu ihi lo oslo lagabe. She, who was sending for him, she didn't go to him. So it seems there's this aspect of haughtiness on her part, that she waited for him to come to her. Karkushta, ksivba, it says regarding Huldah, the prophetess, Imru Lo'ish. She was sending a message to the king, so she says, go tell the man. V'lo Amra Imru Lamelech. And she didn't say to the king, which might have been more appropriate. Omar of Nachman, Huldah Navia Mibnei Bonav Shel Yehoshua Oisa. This prophetess, Huldah, was from the descendants of Yehoshua. Ksiv Ocha, it says by Chuda Ben Charchas, Uksiv Hosam by Yeshua, it says Betimnas Cheres. So in the context of Yeshua, we see a place called Timnas Cheres referred to, and so the word association leads Rav Nachman to associate Chuda with being a descendant from Yehoshua. Esve Raveno Savo, the Rav Nachman, so Rav Eino asks on Rav Nachman. We have a Tanaic source, and in this source there are a lot of names. Focus on the markings, though. The source says Shmoy Neviim Vehein Kehanim Yotsu Meirocha Vazoina. There were 8 prophets, and they happened to be Kehanim. that were descendants from Rochav HaZona. Rochav HaZona, she maybe is well known to some of you as the woman that lived in the wall of Jericho at the time that Yehoshua had sent his spies to scout out the land, and she eventually she saved them from being killed. That's Rochav HaZona. There's more to say on that topic elsewhere, but let's go on in the Gemara in the meantime. So there are 8 descendants from her that were all Kohanim and also prophets, Ve'egelhein, and here they are. Neriah, Baruch. We have some write-ins above the names that will have significance for the Gemara a little bit later, but not for right now. The following are the people that were her descendants. There were Neriah, Baruch, Sariah, Mechasiah, Yirmiah, Hilkiah, Hanomel, Vishalom. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Af Chuldah Hanaviah Mibnei Bonel Shel Rochav HaZona Hoisa. She too was a descendant. So if you're counting up prophets that were descendants from Rochav, so Rabbi Yehuda would say you can add Chuldah to the list. Ksiv Hocha Ben Tikva. It refers to, in the context of Chuldah, it uses the term Ben Tikva. Ksiv Hosam, it says by Rochav as Tikvas Chut Hashoni. Now, again, focusing on the markings, you see the word comparison. Well, according to this source, then, Chuldah is not a descendant of Yehoshua, she's a descendant of Rochav. Omar Le, Rav Nachman answers, he says, Eino Sava, referring to Rav Eino Sava. V'yamri Lo, another expression that he may have used was Pasya Uchma, which means black pot. It means it's a complimentary expression. It means someone that's wise, who extends himself in learning Torah and does with little, so his complexion might turn black. But it's a complimentary expression. And he says, Rabbi Nachman says to Ravena, he says, Miniu minoch testayim shmait, so that through me and through you we will conclude this matter. The igayra v'nosva Yoshua Rochav HaZona, she converted to Judaism, and Yehoshua ended up marrying her. So that when you describe Chuldah as a descendant of Yehoshua, it's not in contradiction to her being a descendant from Rochav HaZona. Rochav HaZona and Yehoshua ended up being husband and wife. The Gemara asks, Umi havu lei zaro li Yehoshua? Did Yehoshua have descendants? V'oksiv, it says in Divrei Hayomim, Divrei Hayomim, the Book of Chronicles, presents the genealogy of many different personalities. And in dealing with the tribe of Ephraim, the verse enumerates a number of descendants from the tribe of Ephraim, and it says, Nun Beno. Nun was the son of his predecessor, Yehoshua Beno, and Yehoshua was the son of Nun. Maybe you are familiar with the expression, Yehoshua Ben Nun. Yeshua was the son of Nun, and in the genealogy stops there. Well, that would indicate that Yeshua had no descendants. So how can you say a moment before that Chuldah was a descendant from Yeshua when we see that his genealogy stops right there? The Gemara answers, Boni lo havule, binson havule. The Pasuk regards his male descendants, of which he had none. He had no sons. However, he had daughters. The Gemara now continues at the top of Tes Vavam and Aleph, but before we continue with the Gemara, let us go back to the frame source we just had that began with Shmoneh Neviim. And we mentioned that there were eight prophets, and we mentioned them by name. And in the source, we took care to note Av and Ben. There was father and son. They don't follow in that order, but rather Neriah was the son, was the father of Baruch. He's known as Baruch ben Neriah. So you've got a father, Neriah, and the son, Baruch. Then you have Sroya and Mechasiah. Mechasiah was the father of Sroya. And Yirmiyahu and Chilkiah, its name was Yirmiyahu ben Chilkiah, so Chilkiah was the father, Yirmiyahu was the son, and finally Hanomel and Shalom. Shalom was the father, and Hanomel was the son. So in the first case, you've got a father and then son. In the next cases, you've got the rest of the cases, you have son and then father mentioned. The Gemara now, with that in mind, continues at the top of Tesvav Amud Aleph. Bishlamo inhu mifarshi. Granted they. Now the they is a reference to Yirmiyo, Hanamel, Boruch, and Sroya. They are explicitly referred to as prophets. In other words, we know that they were prophets. Ela avosaihu minolon. From where do we know that their fathers were prophets? In order to get to the number 8, you've got to count not only the sons but the fathers also, as we demonstrated in the source. But where do we know that the fathers, and that's a reference to Chilkia, Shalem, Neriah, and Mechasya. How do we know that they were prophets? We say Shalem or Shalom. How do we know that? So the Gemara answers, Kid Ula, the Omar Ula, as accordance with Ula's teaching, the Omar Ula kol mokaim sheshmoi v'shem aviv b'nevius, wherever you find a prophet and his father, where a prophet is saying prophecy, and in the context of his prophecy, the prophet is referred to together with his father's name. So biodua shehu novi ben novi, and then it's known that he is a prophet who is the son of a prophet. In other words, that not only was he a prophet, but his father was also a prophet. Shmoi velo shem aviv. If you see in the context of prophecy a prophet's name without his father's name, biodua shehu novi velo ben novi. So he is a prophet, but his father was not. Shmoi v'shem iro mefurosh. If you see a prophet together with his city's name stated explicitly, biodua shehu novi me'oiso ho'ir, then it shows you that he's a prophet from that particular city. Shmoi v'lo shem iroi. If you see a prophet's name without a city mentioned along with it, biodua shehu mi'ushalayim, then it's known that he comes from Jerusalem. B'masni satona. Now, we should have pointed out before, but on the side of the Gemara, we have a nosei mivneh heading. You see Roman numerals 1 through 3 are featured. And we note, prote zihui hakshurim levim. These are details regarding identification points of prophets. They involve avoseim, their fathers, mekomam, their cities, and tzidkusam, their righteousness. So far we've gone through issues of fathers, issues of location, and now we continue with Roman numeral number 3, b'masniso tona, kol shemaisov stumen umaisa voisov stumen, wherever you have a situation where a person's actions and his father's actions are hidden, are not revealed, uporat lochakosu b'echo meim l'shvach, and in one instance, there is an incident that's revealed in a positive, complementary nature. Kagon, Devar Hashem Asher Hoyo El Tzfanya Ben Kushi Ben Gedalia, Biodua Shu Tzadik Ben Tzadik. So then it can be revealed that he is a righteous person whose father was also righteous. V'chol Sheporat Lo Hakosuv Be'echod Mehem Lignai. If in one instance the Pasuk reveals a person's name in association with an incident of a sinful or negative nature, of a derogatory nature, Kigon, Vayi B'chodesh HaShvi Bo Yishmoel Ben Nesanya Ben Elishama. Now this gentleman, Yishmoel, he was a wicked man, and he killed the leader Gedaliah Ben Achikam. And so when you have a situation where something is recorded, but it's of a negative nature, and the reference to the individual is only with regard to this negative incident, so that should tell you, biyodua shu rosha ben rosha. Here you're dealing with someone who's obviously not a prophet, quite the opposite. He's a wicked person, the son of a wicked person. So we have a number of different identification points in this Gemara regarding Nevi'im and others, regarding their fathers, their location, and their level of tzidkus, or the opposite. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you're interested in accessing marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.